love this podcast? Support us by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Hit the link in the episode description to support us now. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
Rolando, what are your thoughts, opinions on Eddie Murphy?
I know that he likes to have, let's just say he welcomes ladies of the night who may not be ladies.
And
that's all I really know of him. Of course, it's a lie because I love me some Norbit.
Of all the movies, Norbit, huh?
Yo, Norbit is so good and it's such an underrated gem. I don't care what anyone says. It's so bad, it's good.
I've never seen it, so oh, I'll take your word for
it's
that.
It's the worst, but it's like so good. It's like a deliciously bad movie.
I remember watching The Nutty Professor in movie theaters and stuff. And
Yeah, that's
another Dr. good one. Dr. Doolittle, which we covered.
We did cover, yes.
One time, apparently, he was like the coolest comedian in the world, and everyone just like loved him and wanted to be him.
Yeah, so I've heard.
including
some of those ladies of the night. Including, yes. I hope that Eddie Murphy isn't listening to this and sues us.
The chances of that are really high. So maybe we should get going with this week's episode. We're going to be talking about Coming to America and the latest Amazon release, the sequel Coming to America.
Yes, the number two. My favorite kind of movie titles.
Wordplay, yeah. Okay. All right, well, I'm Nicole.
And I'm Rolando.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast
about unoriginality. So last week I wasn't here. I was away in Disney World. And you guys did a Superman episode, and I listened to it on my long drive home.
Oh, how? And, I don't know what to say about that other than...
Well, I found it really sweet that you guys actually missed me.
Yes.
Which was really sweet. But I also am a little upset you guys didn't spend more time on the first Superman, George Reeves from like the 40s and stuff. He's pretty well known and famous as Superman, and especially in his death, unfortunately.
Why? Did he die like trying to do... Is that...
Well, for the
I thought it was an
time,
urban legend.
For the longest time, the myth was that he committed suicide, but now it's being reexamined, and it's most likely that he was murdered.
Oh, he was murdered. Okay, yeah. Yes, well.
They even made a movie about it.
Oh,
Hollywood Land with Ben Affleck, I think.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Yeah. Nope. Never.
But
I have.
Had I been in the episode, maybe I would have forced us to talk about.
Maybe you would have. I'm sure because it was in black and white, and it was prior to the 1980s. So. No.
So yeah, and I knew more about it than some of those other Supermen, but cute episode. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Alas and alack, I am back, and this week we are talking about a somewhat recent release, the new Coming to America sequel.
It's been out for just over a week, Nicole.
It's fairly recent. I feel like it's already old news in my opinion, but
okay.
And that's also because I went to Disney and back, so everything before Disney is just old.
Yeah, I mean, once you're in Disney, it all feels like I know from experience, when you're in Disney World, you're in Disney World, and like the world outside of Disney World is like a mystery. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Even as exhausting as it is. So let's just get right to it. Right. Like we said, Eddie Murphy, once upon a time, was the king of comedy in the 80s. I mean, he was so cool. In quotation marks, he even like made music that people listen to. Everybody knows, for the most part, people know that song "Party All the Time."
Yeah, that's such a bop. That's such a good song.
Seriously,
it's terribly good.
He got his start on Saturday Night Live. He was the saving grace after the original cast members left that show, and he got so big on Saturday Night Live that he became a movie star. He did Trading Places, 48 Hours, Beverly Hills Cops. You know, all these movies in the 80s that were just headlined by him, and he was a powerhouse. And, you know, I think one of, now I'm not going to say the first because there are many before him, but he was just like one of the most mainstream successful black comedians, I think.
Yes. But in this country. It's so interesting about those movies that you just mentioned, because I was reading an article about this, and apparently those movies, while having a black man front and center is significant, they weren't necessarily about being black.
No, they were not.
Right. This, the movie that we're going to talk about, was explicitly about being black in
For
America.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, he was just a huge guy in the 80s. And this was kind of like the apex of all of that, I would say. Things really did change after this movie. He started making films that people just weren't into, and his star started slowly rising. And then in the 90s, he just became a full-blown family comedy guy, and he kind of lost his status as Mr. Cool.
And then in the
early 2000s, he just made terrible movies.
It's so interesting, right? Because I just talked about this with, I was on a guest on a podcast, Pretty Much Pop, and we talked a little bit about Eddie Murphy, and they're just like, oh, like how his career faded, now he's coming for a comeback. And I'm just like, my counter argument to that is just like, I don't think Eddie Murphy's career can be judged as like either, star faded and then comebacks. I think he's had ebbs and flows. He's had like epochs, you know?
I feel you.
Let's not forget, he won an Oscar for Dreamgirls.
This is true. He did. Did he win that Oscar?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was Best Supporting Actor that year.
I think.
Oh, you should know.
I think just Jennifer Hudson won that.
Oh,
year.
Was it? All right. Well, he was nominated.
He was nominated. Yes.
So let's not discredit that. All right. Because
no, for sure. Well, also because he had his stand up comedy in the 80s, which was huge, and which like people still to this day love.
Right.
He had Raw, and then he had a different one. I forget what that was called, but those are so popular. And he stopped doing stand-up in the 90s. And then, think about those movies, though, that he did. He did a lot of children's movies. Mulan. He did Shrek.
Nutty. Shrek. How can I forget Shrek?
Yeah, Shrek. Dr. Dolittle.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Doolittle. And then just he even made that movie, The Haunted Mansion.
Okay, that's one of his forgettable ones.
Yeah.
Starring Raven.
I didn't even know that. I've never seen The Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, pretty sure Raven Simone is in it.
Oh. Yeah. Well, that's cool. So recently he hasn't been in that many movies. Like he did Dolomite Is My Name,
which
before
was
that,
fantastic.
Really good. Yeah, that was a good
really
one.
Good. Yeah, and I think he was nominated at least for a Golden Globe for that.
He was nominated. I think he was snubbed by the Oscars, which was a shame because like after watching
it was
that,
really good,
him
yeah.
and Wesley Snipes talk about Wesley Snipes is another one who I think is a shame who doesn't get more roles,
he's a great actor, and we'll talk about him soon. But before that, he did a movie called Mr. Church in 2016, and then before that, A Thousand Words in 2012. So right now he hasn't been doing that much, and he kind of doesn't need to, because even if he stops making movies, Eddie Murphy is still a really prolific name, I feel like, in pop culture.
I would agree.
So I definitely think he's kind of earned his place up there, and it's gonna stay up there. But yeah, so it's just crazy how his career has just gone through so many. I think like it's gone up and it's gone down, and I think a little bit more.
I mean,
kind of like crazy.
Yeah, because I assume a lot of people assume his gone down, never coming back up again, was Pluto Nash.
Yes, and Norbit, which other people.
Oh, I disagree. That's a lie. They're wrong when they say that. Let's not forget, Norbit was, I believe, nominated for a technical Oscar.
Was it?
For best costume and makeup.
Okay. All right. Should we look that up? I'm going to
look that up. I hope it's correct, but I'm pretty sure Rasputia.
The film received a nomination for Academy Award for Best Makeup. You are correct.
Yes. See, there you go. Not many movies can say that they are Oscar nominated. Norbit.
You're absolutely right.
Norbit can.
All right. So did you know that the year that Coming to America came out was the year I was born?
No,
so
I did not know that.
This movie is as old as me. Yeah.
Wow, look at that.
I knew I felt a disturbance in the force.
I mean, some other movies that came out in 1988. I know we love doing this, so let's just do it.
Go do it.
Big came out.
Oh, that's a good one too.
That's a good one. The big movie that year was Rain Man, which also won the Oscar.
Uh-huh.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
My
classic
favorite.
Die Hard, everyone's favorite Christmas movie, apparently. A Fish Called Wanda, Cocktail, Crocodile Dundee 2. It's an interesting year for movies.
Outside of Crocodile Dundee 2, this sounds like a great year for movies.
But number three in the year, and which was the highest for its studio, Paramount, was Coming to America. It was a huge, huge success commercially and somewhat critically.
That was a Paramount movie?
That is a Paramount movie.
Wow. Talk about missed
opportunity. It's constantly playing on Paramount Channel.
It's just crazy to me that it's not available on Paramount Plus at the moment.
Yeah, I guess some sort of legality. Maybe it's because Amazon is like, we got the rights right now.
Yeah, so I guess they got the rights, but that's just, that seems mind-boggling that Paramount would lose that missed opportunity there. Okay.
Well, all right. So anyway, so this movie, is directed by John Landis, who was a huge guy. He was a huge deal in the 80s. He directed the music video for Michael Jackson's Thriller. He did Animal House. He did the Blues Brothers movie. He did American Werewolf in London.
Mm-hmm.
Really prolific. He also did Trading Places, another famous Eddie Murphy movie. Part of the Twilight Zone movie. Spies Like Us, Three Amigos. Just a really,
yeah,
really prolific 80s filmmaker. He doesn't really do much now, and I don't think a lot of people know his name. But
that's so funny. I actually do know his name. Couldn't tell you.
Oh, good for you. Yeah, it's probably because of the Michael Jackson video.
It might be because of the Michael Jackson video.
Yeah. He also did Black and White.
Right. And then and then who was the makeup artist for An American Werewolf in Paris? London.
Rick Baker? Tom Savini?
No, I think it was
It might be Rick Baker.
I think it's Rick Baker. Really quick. Because I think Rick Baker also worked in this movie.
Did he?
I'm pretty sure. Hang on, let me just, because I was doing my research, but as you can see, I'm not the best at doing research because I just forget.
Just writing it down.
Rick Baker.
Let's see, makeup art. Yeah, Rick Baker did the audio. I mean, the makeup for Coming to America.
Right. And if you're wondering why would you need Rick Baker to do makeup, is because, you know, in this movie, famously, Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall played multiple roles, and sometimes they had makeup, including some that involves whiteface.
This is true. Okay, so now let's talk about the plot of Coming to America. So it's essentially about a prince who lives in a country. Do you remember the country's name?
Zamunda,
an African nation of Zamunda.
It's not a real nation, guys.
It's not a real nation, but it is a thriving country, and he's rich. He's a prince, heir to a throne, the only child. He's spoiled, but, you know, he has an idea of what love is, and he wants to find a woman that he can love for who she is instead of his title, and because of, you know, whatever other circumstances it must be. So he has a plan that he wants to go to the United States in the hopes of finding a woman he can fall in love with for her mind.
You know what's
interesting? Where does he go? He goes to Queens
to find his queen.
Now,
yes.
Wasn't that a spin of the globe?
Yeah, they spin the globe and then they just pointed their fingers and miraculously landed on Queens.
Of course. I mean, duh. But it's so funny. Rewatching this movie, the first thing that I realized and I didn't think about when I saw it as a teen is that this is, if you modify the script a little, this could be like a Disney script.
Oh, 100%.
Like,
I feel like
such a rom-com.
This is not the first time we've seen this plot. I can't think of a movie, but it feels so accessible.
It is. It's, you know, it's just, I don't know. Part of it is like a fish out of water story. It's also like, it's also a rom-com.
Yeah.
It's not The Prince and the Pauper, but similar-ish kind of.
Yeah. Well, so this is one of the last Eddie Murphy movies I saw when I kind of like figured out that he was Mr. Cool in the 80s. And I was kind of surprised at how, in a weird way, wholesome it was compared to some of his other films.
Right.
Like, at least he is Eddie Murphy. He's not, you know, he's not as raunchy, and he's just not living up to like that Eddie Murphy hype. He's playing a more subdued character.
He is.
Whereas, and he's letting out in these other characters he's making, which, you know, you haven't seen him put on characters like that since Saturday Night Live. So it's almost a weird, like, him getting back to his, at least, you know, comedy roots of why people fell in love with him and all these different characters he's capable of portraying.
Yeah. I mean, no, this is definitely like this is for the most part a pretty wholesome movie outside of like the nudity and like the penis washing jokes in the beginning. Like, this is like this could be a PG movie. Like I said, if you rewrote it a little bit, it could be like a animated Disney film.
It definitely could, actually, except for the "my name is Peaches and I'm the best."
No, no, that's what I'm saying. This is where I say the rewrites come into rewrites come into play here. But Disney could have had a potential first Black Prince.
They could have,
which I don't think we've had yet. So
we have not, actually.
Yeah, we've had a Black Princess, no Black Prince.
You know, I just want to also praise this movie for also pretty much being a predominantly all Black cast.
Yes,
something that I feel like you did not get a lot of.
This
in
is true.
Hollywood 80s.
No, this is a movie that has I don't know, it feels like Black greatness in it, and you don't get a lot of movies with that.
Yeah, for sure. It was almost like a showcase for
but I think
it.
There's only three white roles in it. Three speaking white roles.
Which, you know, recently there has been news that Eddie Murphy said that the studio pressured them into hiring a white actor in Coming to America because there wasn't any. So they're like, you got to put a white person in there.
And so they picked Louis Anderson?
They picked Louis Anderson.
Of all people?
That Eddie Murphy, according to the story, he was like, I thought he was the funniest white guy I knew, so I put him in it.
Okay.
So, sure. I mean, I feel like he's full of
I only know Louis Anderson really from the Louis Anderson Show, like the cartoon as a kid.
I know him
he was a lawyer
feud.
In Search Party.
He was a lawyer. Yes, yes, yes. I know him now also at other things. Interesting. No, you know, I mean, Eddie Murphy prior to this movie was getting a lot of flack, specifically from Spike Lee, because he was like the it black guy. And Spike Lee basically had gone on record as saying, it's just like, yo, he could change the industry by going to Paramount and saying, it's just like, I'm not making more movies until you hire more black actors. And, you know, I think Spike Lee and Eddie Murphy have had a very contentious relationship as a result of those comments, because, you know, Eddie Murphy has said, it's just like, it's Paramount Studios, not the Eddie Murphy Studios. Yeah. However, keep in mind, then this would be the first movie where we have a predominantly, almost entirely black cast, right? So, sure. I mean, those comments may have struck a nerve, you know?
Yeah, maybe, actually. Which is interesting, because it's 1988, like, Spike Lee didn't have his big film until the next year, so mm-hmm. I'm surprised he was just already starting beef with people.
Yeah.
But hey, I mean, I'm a big Spike Lee fan, so, you know, I give him, I like his voice and I like that he uses it. So anyway, I will say, let's go down the line of the cast members of this film. So we got, as the star, Eddie Murphy. Right behind him is Arsenio Hall.
Yes.
Who it also takes on a bunch of different roles.
Yes.
Eddie Murphy takes on 4 additional roles, and so does Arsenio Hall. We have as King Joffrey, James Earl Jones, mm-hmm. who is just so great in everything he does. We also have John Amos, Madge Sinclair, Sherry Headley, Vanessa Bell, Frankie Faison, Eric LaSalle. I mean, just, and we even have I think his screen debut or one of his earliest roles, Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, no, I think that is his screen debut.
I think so.
I think,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure it is.
Of an earlier film.
Yes, 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 yes.
So, yeah, it's just, and what's so nice about this movie.
Wait, you forgot Garcelle Bersall, I think? She's one
in
of
this
the,
one.
Yeah, she's the one of the flower girls, right? The ones who drops flowers.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The reason I call her out though is because she's now a Real Housewife of I think Beverly Hills.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
She's Beverly Hills.
Yeah, yeah, she's a Real Housewife. So, yeah, there you go.
Did you mention Cuba Gooding Jr. was in this?
He's a boy getting a haircut in this. He plays a little bit.
Oh, okay.
No way!
I didn't know that. Okay, even rewatching it, I missed that.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's just, like I said, this movie is really wholesome. It's nice because there is like a part where, you know, he's being presented as bride. So then he gets a bunch of like musical numbers almost put up in front of him. You know, like there's a lot of performances mm-hmm. in this movie. Some of them comedic, like Steve Martin as Randy Watson, who from Sexual Chocolate, who I actually find that pretty funny. I love Sexual Chocolate and how much everybody hates him.
Yes.
And then, yeah, and there's just so many beautiful performances that happen, you know, yes. like they have full on musical numbers, something that they do a bit excessively, but in the next film.
I didn't complain about it. So it wasn't that much in this one, but I agree with you for coming
for the next
number
one.
Two America. Yeah.
But I mean, overall, you know, how do you feel about the story of this film? Do you think it moves at a good pace?
Oh no, like, I think this, so I am such a fan of this movie. I think it's such a nice story. I think it's such a wonderful story. I actually like the idea of Eddie Murphy coming to, you know, Queens to find his queen, right? That's such a cute story arc. And, you know, like it's true. Because even by the time I watched this movie, like, I knew Eddie Murphy more so for, like, the family stuff, right? So, like, this didn't feel, like, that different from the Eddie Murphy that I knew growing up.
Yeah.
It's not until, like, you know, you start watching the other movies that you realize, like, oh, Eddie Murphy was someone completely different.
Mm-hmm.
This one, I mean, I love this one. I mean, Eddie Murphy is king here, sure, but, like, I mean, the best character in this movie, I think, was Arsenio Hall, Semi.
Definitely. Like,
he had the better role. He had the more fun role where Eddie Murphy had to play the straight man as Akeem. Semi was allowed to be a little bit on, you know, he wasn't even like irreverent or wild. It was more so that he was able to kind of be the spoiled brat because Akeem came to America with like these high hopes, these high aspirations, and willing to forgive like the flaws that America has. Akeem, on the other hand, Semi, on the other hand, he's like, he understands what lavishness is. He understands what that, you know, the life that they're living here in America is like squalor. And I always appreciated that kind of, you know, interesting view of like America, because, you know, so many immigrants, it's an interesting immigrant story.
It is, for sure. And it's interesting to pretty much see Queens displayed as a third world country.
Right. And despite the fact that, like, that's how a lot of inner city neighborhoods were. I'm going to say were because I think number two does something interesting, or tries to.
Yes, it does. Well, that's where most of the comedy in Coming to America does, is putting these, you know, these people who are grown up in such refinement in the middle of Queens, and like, you know, like how when they're seeing the apartment and like they're getting swindled and and McDowell's and all this, there's just so much of that comedy is what I think dominates this film. But then at the heart of it, it is a fairy tale.
Right.
At the end of the day. So, you know, it's like a, that's why I say wholesome too, because even though this was like a adult comedy, I believe, you know, I think it's a family friendly film. It's not my favorite Eddie Murphy. And like I said, and you said that this is something that, like, he's a straight guy.
Right.
And this is something that we don't really see him in. But, I mean, him as not only the barber, but his customer, like the Jewish barbershop customer. Mm-hmm. You know, that right there is just, like, the range of Eddie Murphy's character performances, and being a good impressionist is, I think, also, like, just really funny. And I think they're probably my favorite characters, other than Randy Watson.
Oh, how do you feel about Whiteface?
I don't mind it.
I mean, I don't either. It's not. Yeah. Is that controversial? I guess. Like, are we supposed to?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I'll wait until someone tells me.
It might not even be Whiteface. It might be Jewish face, no less.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's like, now that's a minority on minority impersonation. So I don't know. You guys tell us if that teeters the line, because I find it funny.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry if that offends. I don't know.
Well, so this film was very successful. There was a television pilot for a weekly sitcom that was put out in July. It came out July 4th, 1989.
Ew, with Eddie Murphy?
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
Tommy Davidson was Prince Tarek, and Paul Bates was playing a role called Oha.
What the...
Yeah.
It
never got picked up.
Yeah, rightfully so.
There were some remakes in other films. Like, there's My Dear Martha Haddon, which is a Tamil film. And there's a Hong Kong film called The Fun, The Luck, and The Tycoon. There's been this is a very quotable movie. You know, like, My Name is Peaches, I feel like, has gotten its place in our, like, colloquialisms.
Yeah.
That song that they sing in Coming to America, where he's like, you're... wife to be, or whatever that song is.
Oh, yeah. Right. Okay.
That's definitely, like, I think I've heard that sampled in songs before.
Okay.
And it's just had a huge cultural impact. And I think this is going to be a fun part that we should talk about until we move on, which is that there was a major lawsuit around this film. Did you know about this?
Yes, I actually did, right? Because plagiarism.
Yes.
Yes.
So it was the subject of Buchwald versus Paramount civil suit, and that the humorist Arch Buchwald filed in 1989 against the film's producers on the grounds that the film's idea was stolen from his 1982 script treatment about a rich, despotic African who comes to America for a state visit. Paramount had optioned the treatment from Buchwald, and John Landis was attached as director and Eddie Murphy as the lead, but after 2 years of development hell, they abandoned it. And then all of a sudden, 2 years later, Eddie Murphy's like, hey, I got an idea for a movie. And then they make Coming to America.
I mean, it is a little questionable.
It's very questionable.
Considering also Eddie Murphy has been on record as saying, yeah, it's my idea. I came up with it. It's just like,
very much his.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know, Mr. Murphy.
I don't know about that. I mean, he probably took some parts of it that worked and expanded upon it. But, you know, this is also, I've heard this about Meet the Parents. I've heard this about other films, like, you know, there's a lot of stealing going on out there.
It's
so
true.
Make sure, script writers out there, make sure you trademark and copyright. I mean,
he didn't get the credit, but like he did settle out of court with Paramount, which is crazy because I think he won the first, like, I think it did proceed to trial, and I think he won.
He won.
Then they appealed, and then I think that's when they settled. So it's just like, if he won the first time, it's just like, I would have kept going. For as much money as possible, you know?
I would have kept going until my name was on that damn movie.
Right. But
yeah, so, I mean, regardless, this film, you know, I feel like everybody at least knows about it. You know, it's just a very popular film.
I mean, yeah, I can only feel for the black kids growing up during this movie, though, because like I can only imagine how many Zamunda jokes and like people doing the accents there were around that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a shame. I didn't really think about that.
I mean, it's not something I think about. Well, I guess it only comes to mind now only because now the closest equivalent we've had would be Wakanda and the Black Panther franchise. But
there's a lot with
that. Obviously, that's more of an action movie. It doesn't have, you know, they're not using black culture for comedy, which is interesting, right? Like, do you think that's also controversial? Like, kind of the way that, you know, they're trying to show black culture? I don't think it is.
I mean, I felt like the comedy was more so in Queens.
Right. I would agree with you. Yeah.
The comedy in Zamunda was just how pampered he was. Uh-huh.
No, because I remember reading some articles as of late that were coming out about it's kind of rude the way that they portray Africa and stuff. It's just like, but it's a comedy. That's number one. And number two, it's also like they're not making fun of their cultures or customs out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
Like it's not. I think it's actually done kind of lovingly and almost like this is what we wish people actually thought about African culture. Then because yeah. Usually when it's white media, like the African cultures were portrayed are like either really uncivilized or like impoverished.
Definitely.
You know, so
I think the only people who should be offended are, you know, the residents of Queens because of the way they portray Queens.
Yeah.
So, but that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, so in Coming to America, Prince Hakim finds his princess pretty much at the end of the movie and she surprises him and they get married. And that was it. He didn't find anybody else.
Yeah.
But her.
Right.
And yet, when you hear about the plot for the brand new Coming to America, you kind of go,
Coming to, huh? Yeah. Coming to
America.
Right.
So, and because it's 1:30 and stuff, I figured we should just get to the new one.
Let's get to it.
So Coming to America, 30 years later.
I can't believe 30, over 30, I 30, guess.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's as old as me. So 32.
Yeah.
pretty much if we find out that Prince Hakim actually has three daughters, and that the heir to Zamunda cannot be a woman.
Right.
But as luck may have it, I guess, quote unquote luck, he actually has a son living, a bastard child, in Queens.
Yes.
And we find out that one night when, you know, he met Peaches and he met that Arsenio Hall woman, that he was actually drugged, I guess.
He was. I mean, technically, this is.
He wasn't drugged. He ended up.
He was high. He was high. He was just high.
Yeah, but
she didn't drug him.
He partook in something that he didn't know he was doing.
Anyway. Call it what it is. This was rape, technically.
No, it's not. How is it rape?
Because he didn't know that he was having. He didn't know what he was. Well, because like he first of all he didn't even know that he. Had
he
sex with her, right?
Engaged in sex, yeah. So,
and then
that wasn't her thing.
No, that he got like, raped. He was raped.
I know, but that wasn't.
And she didn't.
She did not rape him.
Maybe she date raped him,
but they were partaking.
All right, fine. Maybe
extracurricular activities, and that led to this.
Maybe it is. Maybe it was a sexual assault.
Certain level of intent.
No, you're right.
There was no intent on her part. She just thought she was having a good time and she thought, okay.
Well, this is literally this whole discussion that we're having is that entire gray area that comes when you're discussing real
rape. How premeditated.
That's the absolute truth. Yeah, because I think some people are absolutely right in calling this scene out as technically rape. And
yeah,
do agree with you, Eddie. It's just like, well, did she? I mean, like, he got it up. So is it rape? I don't know.
I'm not saying that.
Well,
I'm just saying how the scene is presented. They're partaking and they were in a certain kind of space. And
yeah,
one thing led to another.
But the fact is that, like, but here's the thing. And, so Akeem didn't even realize it had happened until 32 years later, when Semi admitted it to him. So he had already forgotten about it, which implies that like he had memory loss, which means he was drugged or there was like some drugs use.
Yeah, it pretty much there was a bit of an unconsciousness going on. And if I was in a situation where I had the opportunity to have sex with someone who clearly wouldn't remember it, I would not do it because I would consider that taking advantage of someone. So I guess you are right. And is there controversy around that? I didn't know that.
It was I saw it called out in some reviews and whatnot, and that scene in particular, because I think some critics felt like it's just like, wow, you could have made up any other excuse, but you decided to go rape. Granted, I feel like sometimes these people are a little trigger happy with like causing a controversy. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Is it the funniest scene in the movie? No. Does it like explain the situation? Sure. Could they have done something better? Maybe. I don't know.
Probably.
You know, it's an interesting topic, I guess. But
yeah.
So the point is that like Prince Akeem has an illegitimate child.
Yes, and he's living in Queens,
mm-hmm.
and Akeem is pretty much given a premonition by his father, who then dies and says that, you know, a son needs to take over the heir because Prince Akeem himself will succumb to death within like a week or two. So there's a ticking time bomb for the film.
Well, it's because Wesley Snipes' character is threatening to take over the country. If
what country?
Nextdoria.
Nextdoria.
Nextdoria. Which, yeah, that was cute.
Nextdoria.
So. That's pretty much the general plot of it. You know, this movie, talk about cast too, like before it was just like a celebration of black actors. This movie took that and like really expanded upon it, particularly in the celebrations that were to happen.
For sure.
The mansion at Zamunda, you know, we got some guest appearances by En Vogue,
Salt and Pepper.
Gladys Knight.
Yeah.
This is Morgan Freeman is narrating stuff.
Straight up nostalgia heaven here.
Yeah, which, you know, like I said before, I felt like after a while it was a bit excessive, but at the same time I was like, oh, this is just like literally like a celebration of black excellence. And this is like also, I mean, I love musical numbers. Mm-hmm. So even though it did nothing for the plot, I was for it. We got some really, really funny people in this movie, other than Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall. We have Leslie Jones, we have Tracy Morgan, Wesley Snipes, even though he's not a comedian, is great in this.
Wesley Snipes is so good. Wesley Snipes is usually good in a lot of things that he does.
Oh yeah, I think, I mean, he was my favorite part of Two Wong Fu, other than John.
Of
Lingua
course, Lingua. I feel like
Naxima
like,
Jackson,
so good.
Yeah, Naxima Jackson.
There's something
so
about,
good.
I mean, when he plays kind of that flamboyant role.
Yeah,
it's captivating. It's captivating.
Just you put
like,
him in a costume, and
he disappears. Just like he's like amazing.
Yeah, he's really I feel like it has been a long time since I've seen Wesley Snipes and something personally, and I was just like, you're so good. I want to see you more.
Yeah, I literally just had that when I saw Dolomite Is My Name, because Wesley Snipes was such a highlight in that movie, and it made me realize I was just like, why. Why is Wesley Snipes getting so much work? Like, he's so good. He's so versatile as an actor.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
And apparently I heard that he's just hard to work with. So there you go. That's apparently the reason why. Allegedly. I hope that's not true, but...
Yeah. But then there's also Jermaine Fowler.
He is the star
of
this movie.
The illegitimate son. Yeah, and this is pretty much his film. And I don't know. I kind of was bummed about it. Now, hear me out.
The whole film
leads up to the fact that, like, you are the prince and you should be able to, you know, it's about, like, getting rid of old traditions that don't work. He has three daughters, right? All of whom, at the end of the day, we realize they should succeed him instead of his son. We don't really get any sense of who the daughters are.
I know.
Yes.
And we focus more on him and his weird story of, you know, finding out and then going there and then going back and you need to come back. It's his story. And yet at the end, it's like, oh, I don't want this. Let your daughter have it. To feel that emotional impact, one, I wanted to see more of the daughters, get a sense at least of who the oldest one was.
Fair.
And then it should have been more of her story, of her trying to figure out, not this kid's random story about finding he's near to a throne and then just leaving it. I felt like that was a little uneven of a story.
Yes.
And the emotional impact was kind of lost on me. However, I enjoyed the film, but that was a bummer, because if you're going to give me that story, then present that story before.
Well, it's beforehand. So interesting. I thought the story was going to go somewhere else I had made a prediction like about a third into the movie. I had predicted.
What was your prediction?
So my prediction for the script was going to happen was that we find out that he's not his biological son, but he's getting all this training to be the prince, and he falls in love with, like, Mika, the oldest daughter, and that this would all work out.
I'm so glad it didn't go there.
Yeah. Oh, so I was, because I remember making that prediction, even I was wondering, like, how do you do that, though, without making it seem incestuous, right? Like,
yeah.
But I guess, yeah, I don't know, American populations might be cool with it now after Game of Thrones. I mean, people were still really shipping hard that the two siblings to the very end.
Were they? That's disgusting.
Yes. You know?
That's what good storytelling, I guess, can do for you.
Let's not call Game of Thrones good storytelling.
Look at that. Eddie.
I very much agree with you. I thought that was what was lacking in this is his relationship with his three daughters.
Yes.
Their characters, I really want them fleshed out because they both looked very interesting, you know, just like by their appearance alone, the way they held, the way they were presence.
There were three daughters.
That's it. Three daughters.
Oh, okay. I think said
yeah,
two.
He said
okay.
It.
Okay. You know, just the way they look, you know, every scene, they just stood out. And so I was like, I wanted to know more about what was going on with that and the whole family situation. And I was just thinking, just would have been a great idea if we would have seen moments where, you know, because she does help him out with the trial of the tiger whiskers, you know, or the lion whiskers.
The lion, yes.
And so it was interesting to, it would have been interesting to see moments where she would have, because they were helping him out. His sisters were helping him out with this whole princely training. But to see the kind of that, them developing a friendship, and him having a moment, and he turns around and said, "You should lead us."
Yeah, you know? You're right.
Yeah, something like that.
You know that. And then it's like, where was the whole father and daughter moments that I was like wanting?
Exactly.
You know, I was seriously. Like, there was so much time flying back and forth to America.
Right.
That I was like saying, I would have been more interested in like father and daughter moments. I also struggled with the character Queen Lisa.
Yeah,
I love
this
actress. I loved her in Coming with America.
Yeah, she's so good in that one. And you're right.
I struggle with the fact is that when she finally gets her moment, when she tells him, like, you know, she tells him the deal.
Yeah.
You know, you see what you're missing, what you're blind of. She's drunk. Her hair is a mess. And her crown is like all lopsided, right? And I'm saying, this is like her moment. Why does she look so crappy? It shouldn't have been like this. It shouldn't have been like she's drunk or she's like, I had too much to drink or, you know, or she's slurring her words. It should have been like sober, defining moment. She's the queen talking to her king about the future of their country.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, you're very impassioned about that.
Oh, yeah, because it just felt like her character after all the... Because really, too, this is also her journey. Mm-hmm. You know, the first one, like, her journey of, like, falling in love, learning this, becoming royalty, you know, being part of the royal family, new country, raising kids, all this craziness, being part of this. And then it's like, she gets kind of just comedy relief, a lot of comedy relief for her.
Yeah.
You know? And
like, they play off her relationship, as a foil to Leslie Jones's character, right? Who is also from Queens, but like...
And then I love the moment when she gave her, like, one of, like, the better moments for her is when she gave her the necklace.
Yeah.
She says, oh, if you're going to wear that, you need to wear this.
The Bulgari necklace.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just thought that was... And she says, because you're family.
Right.
And I said, this is true to the character. This is true. This is the beauty, the compassion, the sincerity of this woman, of this character, of this queen.
Yeah.
For sure.
I don't disagree with both of you on this one. I don't. However, I did not... I am actually willing to forgive all that only because the main character, Lavelle, who was played by Jermaine Fowler.
Mm-hmm. Or Lavelle.
Lavelle. He was so charismatic and he was so... I think he's so endearing on screen that I was still able to enjoy the film. I think he was for sure easily like, I agree with your both of your critiques on the actual story and the plotting and like how the arc for the film as a franchise could have gone. I think you guys are 100% sure. However, with those flaws, I think the main character here is what saved this movie. Like the fact that they didn't focus so much on the subdued Eddie Murphy, but more so the subdued Eddie Murphy, kind of now learning a little bit from this streetwise young black kid from Queens. I think he was so good in this role. I want him to become a star because I think he just has that kind of it quality. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, for a role that wasn't needed at all, he actually mm-hmm. made it seem like it was, and he did a great job. But, you know, I know that they wanted a reason to go back to Queens. I know that they wanted a reason to revisit not just the character of Prince Hakeem, but all the other characters in America.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because otherwise they could have thought call of a it better back way. To America. Coming to America.
But then it's also like, if you were going to go this route, then why'd you give him three daughters, first of all? You could have just given him one and expanded upon that character.
Well, I think that's the comedy there, too, right?
That was, that was the comedy. And it was just like, but then you just, I don't even know their names. I can't remember their names.
Mika,
I really, personality-wise, could not tell them apart. And yeah, and there were just so many moments, like you're talking about with the whiskers. That was great for his character. I would have loved a defining moment like that for that character, for the sister.
She has a name. Mika.
And like, okay, yes. I,
but then she's trying to make a point. She's trying to make a point. Can't you see Nicole's trying to make a point?
Thank you. I mean, she has that great moment where she beats the shit out of, you know, the guy from next door. But even then, it's just like these characters also are watching their father kind of like disgrace them. And they don't really have an opinion about it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. No,
it's
no,
like
no.
The father is overlooking them. And then the queen reminds him of that. But how do the daughters feel about that?
Mm-hmm.
We don't really see it. You know, they're just there to do their duty. They're almost like these obedient daughters without any personality.
No, yes,
it's kind of like looking over women characters yet again. Princesses are just beautiful princesses.
Yeah. For sure, which is interesting, right? Because the whole...
They wouldn't call this the Prince Diaries, right?
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, but no, I think... But you guys are right, right? Because considering this movie by the end is trying to have like this interesting woke message of like female empowerment and like female leadership is good. Like we should be moving, progressing. As a movie, it doesn't do that.
It does not.
No. And, you know, hearing this.
Disney Aladdin film did that better.
Yeah, for sure. With Princess Jasmine. So, yeah. I will say this, though. I think I found myself enjoying this movie a lot more than I thought
enjoyed,
I was going to.
Yeah, I did enjoy this.
I think this
was... I mean, I watched it with my significant other and she enjoyed it very much.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of went into it being like, is this going to be any good? And it was fine.
Yeah,
I will say I came away from this film with a genuine feeling of indifference. I felt like I was entertained, but I didn't feel called to any character. I didn't feel called by any emotional story. Like the story didn't, you know, gather any great emotions out of me.
Sure.
And, you know, thinking about whether or not was it needed. The idea of the girls being the ones to actually take power, I felt like it was going to go that way, the whole film.
Right.
I felt like that was kind of a predictable ending. And yet when I watched the film, I was like, it can't be going there because they're not doing it. And yet it went there.
Right.
So I did find it predictable but yet, you know, very uneven. And it sucks because had they actually delivered me the movie that I thought it would be, then maybe I would have thought that this was a needed film.
Mm-hmm.
But they kind of really... really came up dry, I think. And I actually think that what we got, just in terms of a tour de force of black excellence and really funny performances, great. Other than that, I absolutely think this film was not needed.
Okay.
And it just almost in a weird way felt kind of, this might be mean of me, but fuck it. This felt a little tired.
I mean, yeah.
What?
More so of the old characters that were coming back and just like, how are these characters still alive? But other than
if
when
the actors
Randy
are
Watson,
still alive, you know,
I guess the older characters are still alive. But Randy Watson coming out and singing We Are Family at the end was that made me laugh.
That was a good one. That was a funny moment.
But the rest of it, just like when they got married and Arsenio Hall's pastor's there, it was just, this might have worked 30 years ago, but it's not as funny now. And it's just like, it just, I don't know. It was like you didn't even tell like a straight story, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then you're doing a bunch of tired jokes that, okay, yeah, this was once funny. And the singing at the Zamunda, you know, parties. Yeah. Okay. That was once funny.
Yeah. I'm actually
it's
more
not making
surprised.
Me laugh out loud anymore.
I'm just more surprised there wasn't a lot more Wakanda jokes coming into this movie.
No, I think it would have.
I'm glad they didn't go that route, though.
They should have been more.
Once,
I think it was literally only one reference to Wakanda. It's just like,
once
really?
Twice, but
the only other black nation of in fiction that we know of.
No, I think because we're limited.
I think
absolutely.
I think we're limited on the consumptions of our own, like.
Yeah, we might be ignorant on that front.
Yeah, totally. But,
well, now I know Nextdoria.
You know, yeah,
Nextdoria, very funny. I will say Wesley Snipes is also
the show. I mean,
He more so than Jermaine Fowler.
Oh no, I think this movie would not be successful with if I wasn't so. Jermaine Fowler, like, for sure makes this movie. I think that the entire new cast is actually like probably the saving grace of this movie. They kind of are the things that make this movie so fresh feel. Like, I agree with you. I think tired is the right call to kind of, you know, go back to this franchise. But the fresh faces of this film are kind of the things I like the most about it, which were Jermaine Fowler, Wesley Snipes, Leslie Jones, and Tracy Morgan, right? I think those were, like, those new characters, like, I like them. And, you know, this goes... This kind of becomes a point again where it's just like, well, did this need to be a revival? Could we have not just done, even if we'd done a similar story of Coming to America, but just with, like, you know, just mix up the storyline a little?
True.
Like,
maybe if the daughters weren't there, I wouldn't have.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, maybe you could have done, like, if this wasn't Coming to America, if this was just a black king in a black African nation who discovers that he has an illegitimate son in America. And not related to Zamunda or anything, right? And just turn this into its own story. I think that as a film could have worked. You don't need the Coming to America name.
Yeah.
Right? And now you're giving pop culture like another black fictional country that we can like talk about. I'm just saying, you know.
Since there's only two.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So
I mean, yeah, I kind of agree. I will say that I liked what Lavelle also did in terms of a black character on screen. He was a pretty woke character, you know, and he fought for his emotions and his beliefs. Like when we first meet him and the way he stands up to the guy, Colin Jost, who's interviewing him. Two Colin Jost movies in a row. How'd that happen?
Don't know. Who would have thought?
But I thought that was kind of nice to see because we don't really get like that young, not only a young millennial, but a young black man getting to stand up for himself in that way. So they were able to use that. And I liked that character for that. But, you know, like you said, you could have just had, that didn't have to be Coming to America. That could have been a brand new film.
That would have
been more exciting to see, you know, for also sure. Someone who realized like, maybe I don't want privilege like that, or maybe I don't want to, you know, be in this air. So
I wouldn't have a mind that, because now we're consuming movies television so differently, but I wouldn't mind them taking the story itself and made it into like a mini series, like a couple of episodes, like just a story. It would be one season kind of thing, and just slowly develop these characters, have the humor, but really give us the journey of the young people, the next generation, the next leaders. You know, and give us like flesh that story out and build those relationships. Because then when we get to the end, it doesn't feel like, okay, everything just kind of falls into place, ba, 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 ba. But more like it unfolded this way because of the people.
Yeah. You know? That's an interesting take. I agree. I think that's true.
No, but for sure. I mean, television has ruined movies in the sense where this is a platform where you can tell better stories. So if you don't tell your story good enough in 2 hours, you should have been a TV show.
Although thank you, Amazon Studios, for not turning this into a series, because then I would have had to watch another series for this podcast and I would have been no, thank you.
We say we want series and then...
Well, in theory, I love a good series, but when we're executing for the podcast, I'm just like, no, please, just give me a movie.
I think with this story that was presented, this absolutely would have thrived more as like a 6-part episode miniseries thing.
I could see that. I still think it just would have been more successful as a film if it just wasn't Coming to America. If it was just a brand new,
I agree
story.
With you. So, which I think, what is this, the 25th time we've said that about?
It happens a lot where I think that's the problem. This is the problem. Like Hollywood is afraid of taking risks. So they're just going to.
But do you think that had that movie came out, people would have accused it of being unoriginal or like, oh, you know, what is this? Just like a Coming to America ripoff, and it would have angered people.
Here's the thing. It would have been 33 years since Coming to America. Right. So it's not like you're not ripping it off. If anything,
I'm 32.
32 years. You'd be more like, it's more like you're paying homage to it. You know what I mean?
Yes, which, yeah. I mean, but that's also what these new films feel like, you know? They just feel like homages in a lot of ways to the
original.
They're
homages, but they're still trying to capitalize off of the...
Oh, yeah.
Off of the name. Yeah, that's the difference.
That's the sentimental way of looking at
it. Yeah, so...
Also, do you notice that... I mean, I'm going to call this the Cobra Kai effect, but, like, do you notice that they have the Cobra Kai effect where they take, like, scenes from the movie and when they're recalling it and, like, play it in front of you?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I feel like Cobra Kai has definitely popularized that, so I keep seeing it, and now I'm just like, oh, my God, they're doing it in this too, yeah. So...
I mean, again, it's just, like, I think it's exploitative.
I definitely would.
When they do that. Despite the fact that I enjoyed it in Cobra Kai, but, like, in Cobra Kai... Like, I think they're working in the fact that, like, I think they were working off the fact that, like, maybe the younger audiences haven't seen this. Or I guess you can make the same assumption, though, for Coming to America, though, right? Like, maybe younger audiences haven't seen Coming to America, so you need
I feel
flashbacks.
Like more so in Coming to America, though. Like, why would you watch this if you haven't seen the original?
Well, I think with Cobra Kai, the reason you would watch that is because, like, it's supposed to be, like, a brand new, fresh story, new
yeah,
kids and
more
stuff.
Yeah, more but, so
but
for
you
Coming
take
to
it or
America.
Leave it. Yeah, too, because yeah. of being a fresh story, like I can go back.
Yeah, you don't need to. Yeah,
you don't mm-hmm. go back. Yeah.
You definitely need the original Coming to America to respond to any of the characters that we
fair,
see
yeah.
again.
Well, again, there you go. So maybe it's just proof that, like, yeah, this could have just been its own movie and stuff.
Definitely.
Well, what can you do?
Mm-hmm. This was also directed by Craig Brewer, who directed Dolomite Is My Name.
Oh, no way. Okay.
Yep. And also did Hustle and Flow.
That's a good film.
Black Snake Moan.
I've never seen that one.
Yeah. A lot of people have criticized this film for having a white director. I mean, the original had a white director. And I think that... Do you think that a film like this needs a black director? Where do you stand on that?
That's a good question. I didn't think about that. I don't know if it needs a white director. No, I don't know. Maybe.
It depends. So here's an argument that I would make, I guess, in favor of those people who are saying it. There's this really prolific film about two lesbians called Blue is the Warmest Color, based on a graphic novel written by, you know, a gay woman. Mm-hmm. And the film is directed by a straight man. And it is known for its, like, 15-minute really, really... really
explicit.
I don't even explicit sex scene.
Okay.
And a lot of people came for it because they were like, why was that there? Like, and also this is a straight man
was
putting
like,
his camera on two like, women having sex.
So it was like porny.
It felt that way, right? Okay. And there have been a lot of women who have watched that film and been like, yeah, that seems like the kind of sex I have. And other women who looked at that film and says like, no, not at all.
Okay.
This feels like I almost feel the fact that this was a man who filmed this.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is a very unique example I'm giving here, but sometimes in cases like this, you know, you do need a person who understands certain things. I don't feel like this film, the original or the new one, has anything that is specifically for a black audience to enjoy or to understand. I feel like this is a very universal story just told with a predominantly black cast, which is wonderful.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, so it's interesting, right? Because I know that Disney made a big deal of just like, yo, look, Black Panther is also directed by a black director. And it's just like, wow, do you deserve a pat on? That's a problem, I think. I think that...
Well, I don't know if Black Panther has a commentary to it.
No. But I would say more so, I would make the argument, like, to hire a black director to direct this movie just for, like, the press is more problematic. Then,
that's true. I would agree with that. Yeah.
Then, you know, same thing with Wonder Woman, right? Like,
yeah,
they were like hyping up the fact. It's like, this is a woman who directed this movie. Go watch it. And stuff.
It's
an
action movie.
It's a good movie. Regardless, I don't need to watch it because it's a woman. You know what I mean? Like,
Seriously.
I think that's, I would say this is more problematic than having a white director. Because, especially considering like how he directed Dolomite Is My Name. It's just like he has respect for what he does. Like he respects the subjects that he's filming and stuff. So
he's a good filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, this is a fairy tale, like we said.
Yeah.
You know, this is just it just so happens to have a cast.
You could have made him Aztec or something, right? And it's so the story is not changing that much.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I could understand it, but I guess if the material was more specific and had more of a commentary to say than I would agree with it. But Have you seen Coming to America and its new sequel on Amazon Prime? What are your thoughts? Do you agree with us? Do you not agree with us? What did we miss? Reach out to us, please. Remakes, Reboots, Revivals at Gmail is a great way to reach out to us. We are also active on Instagram at Remakes, Reboots, Revivals, Facebook.com/Remakes, Reboots, Revivals, at Remakes Podcast on Twitter. And please, if you enjoy this podcast, find us on wherever you listen to podcasts, follow us, and on iTunes, give us a nice 5-star review if you are a fan of ours. It really does help us out.
So we really do want to hear from you guys. So be sure to also give us a call and leave us a voicemail. The number is 862-248-2326. We just might play it on the air. Once again, that number is 862-248-2326. And yeah, we want to hear from you guys. So
on that note,
stay unoriginal.